Hi, this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show.
Hey, are you letting the five C's of mediocrity hold you back? Now, you probably never heard of these before, Negan. We're going to reveal them on this show to you. But first, I want you to imagine something. I want you to imagine that you're a high school teacher and you were given $100,000 to go and chase your dreams. And then you lost all that money and had to go back to teaching. And so you searched and you searched and you found a coach who happened to be me. And I helped you build a million-dollar business. And then you went on to build a $100 million business. And today you are impacting millions of people on social media and through your email. Now, I know the truth sounds stranger than fiction, but this is an actual person that exists. And I want to introduce you to this young man from New Jersey, a guy that called me up in December of 2009 asking for my help to get started, to overcome those five deadly C's that hold people back in life. Well, he was able to overcome them, become a millionaire, and now he flies around the world interviewing his mentors, best-selling authors, and the world's most influential people. Hi, my name is Craig Valentine. I'm going to reveal all of this in an amazing episode of Early to Rise Radio. I want you to meet my friend, my client, my mentor, and a man that I've known for 10 years, Joel Marion. I was in his wedding party in 2010, and I helped him get out of a coma in 2011 after he hurt himself in an exercise accident, of all things. And then since then, we've made big money together, and I've watched him dominate, not just compete, but totally dominate in the fitness industry. He's an absolute machine, and he has overcome what, again, we call the five C's of mediocrity, and you're going to learn how to do the exact same thing on this show. Early to Rise Radio is brought to you by my new book, Unstoppable, which Joel has read, and my first game-changing book, The Perfect Day Formula, which Joel has used to control his life. So grab your copy of my books at freeperfectdaybook.com so that you can improve every area of your life. Now, Joel and I recorded this show in Dallas, Texas, where we were speaking at a capitalism conference and sharing our wisdom and experience with over 500 entrepreneurs. Make sure you listen to the very end, where you're going to find out how to get more free information from Joel about how to dominate your industry. Doesn't matter what industry you're in, man, he has information and experience and expertise for you in every area, as well as every area of life. And he's going to help you overcome all of these five deadly C's. Okay. And the last one is most important. So sit back, enjoy this show. It is an epic one, and take tons of notes because Joel is going to help change your life. All right, Joel Marion, you and I have now known each other for almost 10 years. This is going to be epic, right?
Absolutely epic. It's never anything less when we get together.
Oh, man. Going to be awesome. So listen, for a long time, you've been talking about the five C's that hold people back. The five deadly C's, actually, right?
They are very deadly. Yes. They can be, yes. When it comes to entrepreneurial success.
Yes, that's right. So the five deadly C's of entrepreneurial success. And yes, we may have just made these up, but I know Joel's story, and these are really, really powerful, and they're very true, though, very true. So listen, Joel, let's start with the first C, which is circumstances. And you know what? We both came from modest means, but the listeners would love to hear about the circumstances you started. First, let's just go high school and all that stuff. You know, You worked Burger King and all that cool stuff. And then when we met, when you were a teacher.
Yeah. Okay. So There's, although I have achieved a modest level of success, there's nothing special about me as far as my skill sets, the opportunities that I was born into. Granted, I certainly was born into more than some others have been, but as far as where I'm at now compared to where I once was, there's a very drastic, stark difference. Going all the way back to, I came from a lower middle class family home, grew up in Trenton, New Jersey until I was about 12 years old, going into sixth grade. And, I lived in a very, very poor area. I think the house that we lived in until I was 12 years old, my parents bought for like $50,000 after they had first gotten married. And then we moved into the suburbs of Philadelphia, into a nicer home when I was going on 13 years old. And, I think that house cost maybe $120,000 or something. So they worked their way up to buying, you know, a decent home for us to live in. Fortunately, I went to private school, which was definitely, I look back at that as a big advantage. The education and the people that I was surrounded with, and we're going to talk a little bit about environment later. But, I wasn't blessed with anything. I didn't come from wealthy parents. I didn't come from parents who had accomplished a great deal as far as education was concerned. My dad I believe he got his GED. My mother did not go to college. My brother barely graduated high school. And, I was the first one to kind of break out of the family mold and actually go to college. I graduated second in my class in high school. And it was a relatively small school, but yeah. It had 32 kids in my graduating class. But still, I think I had a 4.0 GPA, and I think my grade point average from in numerical form for my entire high school was like 99.7 or something like that. So I did very well in school, went on to college, and throughout that time in college, I always knew that I wanted to achieve more than just graduating college and then going and getting just a regular job like everybody else does. And
so if I can just interrupt there, yeah. So like circumstances for me, I grew up on the farm, and my mom thought, hey, if you can get a job as an accountant, that'd be like, yeah, it'd be huge. So what were the circumstances that way? Like, your mom's awesome. Was she like kind of thinking the same way?
Well, yeah, she, no, I was told by my parents, well, they won, that they were thrilled that I was even going to college. Yeah. And then I had expressed an interest in getting into fitness. And I was actually I was very negatively spoken to about getting into that field because I think my grandmother had a newspaper article that showed the salaries of different professions. Uh-huh. And then one was a personal trainer, and they made like $12,000 a year or something like that. And my mom was like scared to death that she was wasting her money, on college tuition. Mm-hmm. And I would go and have this job that wasn't able to really support myself and sustain, myself and, a family in the future. So they kind of shied me away from that. It was actually kind of a blessing because my dad was the one who suggested that I double major and get my health and physical education degree at the same time. So I did that. And while I was still writing for magazines and while I was in college, I actually won the Body for Life contest. Many people know that about my story.
Well, here's the thing. I didn't know this about this part of the story. The other day, you were joking around. We were out for dinner, and you were talking about what you actually ate while you were doing this, because this is a great example of how – some people can say circumstances are deadly because I'm going to college. All I can do is eat, the food from the cafeteria. It's going to stop me from achieving my health and fitness goals. But what did you do?
Yeah. So in that particular situation, I entered this Body for Life challenge, and I was supposed to have a portion of lean protein with every meal, 6 meals a day, a portion of lean protein, which is the size of your palm, so the size and thickness of your palm. And then for me, I wanted to bulk up. So Bill recommended two portions of carbohydrates. Okay.
Protein or carbohydrates?
Carbohydrates.
Okay,
one protein. And then if you wanted – it was normally if you were in weight loss, it would be one portion of carbohydrates. Got it. If you wanted to bulk up, yeah. All the difference there was just adding an extra portion of carbs. So I would go to the cafeteria and I would always have a protein shake in the morning. And then I'd go to an early lunch. I would get – two sandwiches, turkey sandwiches, I would disassemble them, throw the bread away, and then I would have my next two meals. I had two lean portions of protein from the deli there, and then I just grabbed a handful of apples, and I'd always eat two apples because that was like the simplest way for me to meet the requirements. You know, I didn't know. I was just learning about nutrition at the time, so I thought, like, as long as I met the requirements, obviously two baked potatoes is very different than like two apples, but I didn't really understand the difference at that point. But anyway, I did whatever I needed to do to make sure I put a check in each box of what I was supposed to do. I ended up winning that contest back in 2001. I was 19 years old, and that kind of got me into writing for a few different magazines, EAS supplements, and the Body for Life program had a partner magazine called Muscle Media. That was the first magazine that I was published in, and then I got published in Testosterone Magazine, TNation.com, online, and then from there I just went and I was able to kind of branch out into writing for a bunch of different trade magazines, both online and offline. So, you know, going back to my education and the cards that I was dealt and all that, I had to break the family mold from an educational standpoint, from a financial standpoint of what I thought was possible to earn as a living. I had to break the circumstances that I was dealt in, the mentality that I was kind of given, where you know, that I couldn't even make money in the field that I wanted to go into. And then so I end up getting, the teaching degree. And as I was, I taught for 3 years, and as I was doing that, I was getting all this other stuff off the ground. And then towards the tail end of that third year is when I met you.
Right. Right. So, you know, everybody listening, the circumstances, you know, one phrase that you said is you did whatever you needed to do. So what advice would you give somebody out there dealing with the first deadly C, which is circumstances?
Yeah. So, you know, you're going to have any, there's a spectrum of the cards that you're dealt, and you can be super fortunate on one side, and then you can be really unfortunate on the other side, and then there's everywhere else in between.
Right.
I think guys like me and you, Craig, fell somewhere in the middle,
sure,
maybe towards the, you know, the left side of that spectrum a little bit, but still, we're not the worst, certainly not the best. But you're going to find yourself on this, and each and every single one of these situations has its own benefits and drawbacks. If a lot of people, you know, I was talking about this with Dan Long the other day, and where he said, name one person that we know who makes a lot of money, who's in our circle of colleagues, who came from a wealthy family. And we could not think of one person, right? So I think the people who come from well-to-do families, maybe they end up, you know, going to college, maybe a nice school, maybe even an Ivy League school, come out and then they're making, you know, low six figures. And that's kind of what everything that they wanted to achieve, right? Because that's, they feel like that's the hand that they were dealt. But unfortunately, they didn't have enough chip on their shoulder coming up like we did, to where we came from nothing and we wanted to defy and beat the odds. They had, you know, they're very fortunate. So it makes me think about what my own kids, they're dealt very different circumstances compared to what I was dealt, right? But I have to, you know, I'd be very careful with how I indoctrinate them with different belief systems, as well as making sure that we don't just give them and hand them everything throughout life, because even the wealthy, the people who come up wealthy, which my kids are, they're going to have their own set of challenges. So no matter what your circumstances, here's the bottom line, guys, whatever your circumstances are, you can still be successful no matter what. There's no set of cards that you're going to be dealt where you say, oh, this is just a losing hand, there's no way that I could win. Yeah. No, you just have to figure out how to best play that hand, how to best maneuver, and then eventually you will get there. Sometimes it might take a little bit longer than if you were dealt a different hand, but you can still figure it out and you can still get there. So many people have been dealt close to nothing and played an amazing hand. And then there's other people who were dealt pocket aces and they squandered them, right? Yeah. And so it doesn't matter where you're starting. It matters where you finish, and how you play the hand is up to you.
So you interview, I mean, your podcast, Born to Impact, interviews amazing people, and one of them was named Nick. What was his last name?
San Anastasio.
Yeah, yes. So Nick was born with No legs,
one arm, which only had a hand with one finger.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so.
The middle finger.
Right. I guess so. but yeah, I mean, it's a classic example of somebody who was born, and you would look at him, and on the surface, it looks like he had every reason to make excuses and be a victim and be dependent on other people and accomplish very little in life. The guy is out there. He's a global keynote speaker. He's just posted a video of him snowboarding.
Wow.
And he's found a way to pretty much do everything. And that's exactly what we're talking about. You can his big thing is adapt and overcome. Somebody like Nick, born without legs, only one limb, and then on that limb, and he has a partial hand with one finger, he's able to dress himself, he's able to drive a car, he's able to feed himself. He can be completely independent. Obviously, it helps if someone's there to speed it up, but he's figured out ways to do all of these things. And it really is, it goes back to a testament to his parents, because his parents didn't allow him to feel sorry for himself. And they said, Nick, here's dinner, figure it out. Wow. Or Nick, here's, in the most polite way possible, Nick, here's what you're wearing today. Here are your clothes. Figure it out. You need to dress yourself, because at some point in time, mom and dad are not going to be here to do this for you. So from a young age, that's how his parents raised him. And although he was dealt some of the worst circumstances coming up, he was the eighth person in the entire world to be born with this condition that he has called Hanhart syndrome. And eighth person, and I think it was five out of the eight didn't survive because they had undeveloped organs. So he took the position of gratitude right from the beginning and said, hey, his parents were thrilled that his organs were fine.
Got it.
And it became a situation which they had a lot of gratitude about, because he could have been one of the five who didn't make it.
Wow, that's amazing. An incredible story. And that leads into the next one, which for all of these five C's, they can either be, like you said, they can be a hindrance or a help. And the next one is crowd. So Nick's parents were a great part of the crowd. Yep. And, I know that you have friends from high school that you still hang around with today that are some of your best friends. We traveled with them to Africa this summer. Yep. So talk about the power of crowd and how that can help or hurt.
Well, I mean, I think as you're growing up, and if your parents are involved in your life and they care about you, they'll try to steer you away from certain groups of friends and into healthier groups of friends. Fortunately, I made some pretty good choices with the people that I associated with in high school, still to this day, some of my best friends. But when it comes to business, my one best friend is very very successful in business. He's been with Chick-fil-A since we were 15 years old, where I worked when I was in college as well. And he's worked his way up to that, and he makes multiple six figures a year. My other best friend now owns his own landscaping company that's growing and doing very well. But those aren't necessarily the guys that pushed me to get to where I was from a professional standpoint. They supported me and they were awesome friends, but I needed to surround myself with people who were at an income level that I aspired to be at, that were doing exactly what I wanted to do. And they were in two, one's in landscaping and one's in food services. I wanted to be in fitness. So in order for me to really have put myself in an environment that was going to, one, stretch me, and B, just give me the emotional and social support that I needed to really take things to the next level, and to also inspire me to level up, I need to get around guys like you. And that's why I hired you as my first business coach. And I see this so many times where people are just not surrounding themselves with people who think big enough, mm-hmm. or they're not networking their way into circles that they want to be in, and they're just expecting, oh, I'll never know them. I'll never be where they are. They have these self-limiting beliefs, and when you have those, obviously it makes it very, very difficult to make the changes that you want to change. Once you have the right people around you, though, it becomes exponentially so much more easy to continue to progress, because you have the right support in place, you have the right examples in place, and then you have people who are going to sharpen you around you. The polar opposite of that, obviously, is not having the social support, not being around anybody who's inspiring you to level up, being around people, even worse, around people who are very negative or super complacent where they are, which is another one of the C's that we'll talk about. But getting your environment right is a huge step into stretching yourself to achieve these big goals that most people don't understand. Most quote unquote normal people won't support or understand.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, we're speaking at a conference here. We're in Dallas right now. And, you know, I was just telling Joel, a young man, a listener, a guy named Daniel, came all the way from Taiwan to this event here in Dallas to meet Joel, to listen to Bedros, to listen to me, to meet all the people. So, I mean, just stepping outside of his comfort zone. But one thing that you also did, Joel, just kind of change, you know, the mindset about crowd or a different way of looking at things, is that you brought, once you got to the top, you brought the crowd along. And can you tell our listeners why that's important to give opportunity to people?
Yeah. So in our industry, you know, I was a nobody in the very beginning, as everybody has to start somewhere. And I, you know, had my hit list. I made a hit list of all the big players in the industry that I wanted to get to know, that I wanted to become friends with, that I wanted to ultimately do business with. And then as those know my story, I led with value, and I tried to do as much as I could for them, even with my limited resources, to show them that, like, hey, I'm not asking for any handouts here. I want to deliver value to you first. And if I can put all my ducks in a row, maybe learn something from you along the way, when it comes time that I put a great marketing funnel together, or I have a product that's worth promoting, that they would have that goodwill affinity towards me. Now, if I didn't do my work and I released a product that didn't convert and bombed for everybody when they sent mailing for it, I would have got the first mailing, but it was up to me to get the results, to get the second mailing. So once I got into the industry, I realized quickly that, you know, not a lot of people had approached it in a similar way that I had, that it was very fragmented, and people were just kind of all over the place and working in silos. And what I saw was an opportunity to bring a lot of smart people together in an industry where we could all help one another. And, you know, it kind of was born into this industry, the idea of co-opetition, which is, you know, you're not competing against people, but you're cooperating with people who you would otherwise deem as your competition. Mm-hmm. And when you can do that, and when you can join forces, you know, with me, with the Craig Ballantyne, or me with the Mike Geary, or, you know, our friend Bedros, who's also speaking at this event, but you can join forces together, put your minds together, your business acumen together, because your strengths are not necessarily my strengths, right? And then when you got, you know, a dozen to 20 different people in an industry who all have unique skill sets, can help each other level up. Oh, you know, you're really awesome with video. Maybe you can share some of the cool stuff that you're doing on YouTube, so I can bring up that weak part. And I'm really, really good at copy, so why don't I help take a look at your sales letter and help you fine tune that? Because guess what? When I promote you, if you have a better funnel, I'm going to make more commission, right? And vice versa. If I have a better business model and a better funnel because of the help that you gave me, you're going to make more commission. Ultimately, you know, I came on the scene and I ran my very first launch was the biggest launch in the fitness category on ClickBank of all time at the time, which was, I think we did $365,000 on that first launch.
And you did 365.
Yeah, in a 3-day period, right? And that was the biggest thing. That was the biggest combined effort that anyone had ever done, where everyone was kind of promoting one centralized thing all at the same time. And everyone was unified, right? And then from there, we just got better at it and better at it. And we brought more people into the fold, more affiliates. We even helped people who were up and comers. And we didn't say, like, anybody who showed initiative, who tackled things the same way that I did, I had a soft place that I wanted to help them succeed. So we had guys like Adam Steer come up through the ranks, and other people who have been in your mastermind, Craig. And then next thing you know, it wasn't just like 20 or a dozen guys and then 20 guys, but we had 40, 50 players in this space. And that's truly the reason why we were able to do a $1 million launch in a fitness ebook niche.
Which is what you did after the 300.
Right, yeah. We did 365, and then the next product I launched was with our friend John Romanello. It did close to 500. And then the very next one that I did after that was Extreme Fat Loss Diet, where we did over 1 million. Now, granted, it was at the time, it was just ahead of its time as far as marketing, and it was an awesome concept that people really wanted, you know, how to do this crazy diet and lose just an insane amount of weight in 25 days. You know, it wasn't meant to be a long-term program, wasn't positioned as a long-term program, but it was a Kickstarter, which you can then go into a more normal program after that. So we had the marketing on our side, but again, if it was just me marketing it, maybe we do $150,000. But I have 50 other people that we're pulling from, and we built this network of friends and colleagues and affiliates to where the million-dollar launch became something that was possible, and we did that 3 times after that.
Yeah, that's amazing. And, you know, one of the phrases that I love is send the elevator back down, which is, you know, when you get to the top, do the same as what someone did for you. And I remember our friend Sean Hadsell sent you an email, said, hey, I just want to come and, like, you know, I'll shadow you for a day or something. Mm-hmm. And you give that guy the opportunity, which most other people will be like, oh, I'm too busy. But, you know, just speak to that and maybe tell a few Super Bowl affiliate parties stories, because those things were epic and legendary, you know, 100 people over to your house to celebrate.
Yeah, so we, you know, I was constantly trying to build a community within our industry, and more and more people were being added to the fold. And as that, more and more people became successful. And this is a huge reason why so many people stay relatively small or experience a little bit of success, but they never explode, because they're worried about, oh, the more people that come into the space, it's going to become crowded. No, people want to lose weight every single day of the week. They're going to do a diet. They're going to buy the next diet. They're going to buy multiple diets at the same time. You know, this is an industry which as long as people are working together with the right type of mindset and attacking this thing together, it's never going to get overcrowded. There's more than enough pie to go around, right? And I was interviewing Grant Cardone the other week, and he just said, you know, no, most people don't even like pie. And then he said, oh, well, if one pie gets used up, you always just make another pie.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of as, especially in our industry, the potential is infinite. So my whole thing was just the more people we can bring in, the more people we can raise up to be successful in this industry, the more we can all help one another, promote one another, and that revenue pool is just growing. And it's, you know, it's kind of like I was starting a company, and then these are all team members of mine. Mm-hmm. And I knew that as long as I continue to grow the team and invest in the team and have more successful people on the team, then the company is going to grow as a whole, right? And that was our industry. Our industry I treated like it was my company.
Yeah, and I think it's really important that you said that, because the question that was just going through my mind was, you know, people are going to be listening. They're going, oh, you know, I'm not in the fitness industry, or I'm not in the online industry. How is this applying to me? And you just nailed it there, because you just raise the potential of everyone around you, whether you're a team leader, whether you're the manager inside a bigger company, or whether you own a company. The greater that you make other people and you kind of put your ego aside and you lift everybody else up, everybody's going to have that really great victory in life, right?
Exactly. And you had mentioned the Super Bowl parties, and that was another thing that I kind of was one of the first people to do. I brought people together and from an industry who you would see each other here and there, or maybe you would talk on the phone, but no one really met in person or whatever. I after my very first launch, we had like a top 10 affiliate mastermind, and then I was moved that to like these epic affiliate vacations that we would do to different areas, and we'd all get together and we'd share business ideas and network, and then we'd have a lot of fun. We'd do some really fun activities and go to epic dinners and stuff over a 3 or 4 day period, and just get the whole crew together. And then that ended up getting bigger and bigger, each one of those. And then we had these vacations where we'd take 30 people to Mexico. And then it was the first Super Bowl party that we had, where we had it at Disney in Orlando. We had, I think, 55 people there. And then we moved it to my house the next year. I think we had 75 people. And then eventually grew it to where I had 150 people at my house. And these were all movers and shakers in the industry, right? These are all people who are making each other better. And you just imagine if you have 75 people who are doing great things in the industry all together and working together, it's going to go a lot further than just the 10 that we had at the first, you know, little trip that I did where I brought people into Tampa and we had our own mastermind.
Yeah. And then, you know, the guy who you ended up doing business with, Josh Bazzoni, kind of did the same thing. He had a fitness event. Yeah. And eventually the two of you, like you said before, you have your skill set. Another person might have their skill set. And you guys saw the opportunity for synergy. Yeah. And you started a company.
If it weren't for Josh having this very similar outlook that I had, I wouldn't have met him. The BioTrust probably would have never happened. I certainly wouldn't have been involved in it. And we wouldn't have had the opportunity to grow such a great company that has achieved so many remarkable things and achieved some pretty remarkable milestones within our industry. I met Josh. He was holding an event where he wanted to bring the industry together. I think we had about 85 entrepreneurs there. And at that event I spoke at, that's where I met him the first time. He invited me to speak. Dean Graziosi was there.
Tim Ferriss was
there. Was there, yes.
And that guy with eight, remember the guy in the van that had the eight exit pops?
Yeah, we had.
That guy, he didn't
last. There were some shady characters in there as well, as there always are.
Goes back to the crowd. You can get in with the wrong crowd that pulls you down, but you know, yeah. We focus
and
on
And you
the
see that too, because you know, you go to events like Affiliate Summit East or Affiliate Summit West or even Traffic and Conversion, and there's going to be the solid group of marketers in our industry that we've all just become great friends, and we're doing the most good that we can in the world and helping a lot of people while obviously building great businesses at the same time. And then there's like the sleazeball category of people who just like turn and burn. They don't give a crap about the customer. They make terrible products. It's all about just making excessive claims in marketing. And, you know, it's which team do you want to join? Do you want to join the one that's going to have longevity? Do you want to join the team that has integrity and is operating from a position of wanting to truly help people? Or is it the people who are just about the dollar? And guess what? I've never seen anyone that's in that other category last more than a couple of years in the industry.
Yeah.
Because, you know, either they get themselves in some sort of legal trouble or they just get blacklisted or something by, you know, because they're using all these practices that are considered either gray hat or black hat. And when you're doing that, obviously, it's not a recipe for longevity.
Yeah. Absolutely. So that brings us to the next one, which is criticism. Because if you go back to that first $1 million launch, I wouldn't say you got criticism, but you ran your idea by somebody who was an editor for a big magazine in the fitness world. And he said, no, you can't do that. That'll never work or something like that. And so that's one type of criticism. You can get criticism from family as well. And so that can be a deadly seed that can hold a lot of people back, really keep them, too scared to do something.
I mean, I've been dealing with criticism going all the way back to when I met you. I hired you as a business coach. I had a girlfriend at the time. I was teaching, had a girlfriend at the time. I invested $3,000 with you. Wow, that was on a $42,000 a year salary. I had $18,000 in credit card debt or something at the time that put me over 20, except threw that on a credit card. But, you know, my girlfriend was not supportive at all. She criticized me. She thought of this, you know, I was being extremely foolish, you know, that I was hiring this, you know, sales guy, this sales guy that I would be giving you $3,000 and, that's such a lot of money, and what is he possibly going to do for you to make it be worth $3,000 and whatever. So that relationship didn't last, but she didn't support the vision of what I wanted to accomplish. But that was just one type of criticism, you know. Then you have, you know, the type of criticism that you deal with from friends and family as you're like trying to get this stuff off the ground and you're spending a lot of time and they're like, oh, what's Joel doing? He's, you know, some people feel like you abandoned them when really you're just trying to do what's best to set yourself up for the rest of your life so you can have time and freedom in the future to maybe even spend more time with them. Then you have criticism when you have any level of success. People, now you're successful. First it's like, no, you can't do that. Why are you doing that? You're wasting your money. And then it's like you're in the middle of the grinding out, trying it, and you're getting criticism, people questioning what you're doing, what your motives are. Then you achieve success, and then you get the haters that come in, and they're criticizing you because – you became successful. So I guess the real take-home message here is that at any point along the line, you're going to have to deal with criticism. It's never going to go away. And you just have to learn how to process it. Not saying that any – there's obviously constructive criticism and good criticism, but not saying that all criticism is bad. But just take it all with a grain of salt. You know, if something feels like it really resonates and sticks and can cause some positive change for you, then absorb it. Otherwise, just, you know, if you're constantly worrying about what everyone is saying, I used to spend a lot of time on bodybuilding message boards. And I, you know,
when you were young, just, when you were really young.
Right? Well, yeah, in my early 20s before I really got into what I was doing. But it was when I was writing for magazines.
Yeah.
I would never. Like, I don't even engage on social media. I make a post, and maybe I post something that's controversial, and somebody may write a long comment who disagrees with me. I'll respond. I have a rule. I will respond one time to somebody. I don't want to just ignore people and sure. feel like, oh, he doesn't respond to anyone who doesn't agree with him. But I'm going to respond once, and then that's it. I have that rule in place that, like, I'm not going back and forth with somebody, wasting my day away, arguing with some guy on the internet.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a productive thing. And there's always going to be somebody to argue with if you want to. But for me, that, you know, that's not making me any money. That's not helping anyone else. It's just, you know, ultimately it becomes – one of these ego matches with somebody online, and I avoid that at all costs. But the whole point is that you're going to deal with criticism in every step of the way, whether you are unsuccessful in trying to do something, the whole process of you trying to get it off the ground, and then once you achieve some level of success. I grew BioTrust with my partner from a small team of 8 people to over 150 employees in the first 18 months, and to show over $100 million in revenue. Till this day, I have people who will say, because obviously it's a privately held company, they don't have access to the numbers. They oh yeah, right. There's no way they possibly did that. You know, I'm like, all right, what am I going to do? Sit here and, like, every time somebody doubts me, I'm going to have to pull out some paperwork and show them. Like, I know what I did. I know what our company did, and there's always going to be people that are out there trying to discourage you or trying to make what you accomplished seem less than it actually was. And the more you pay attention to them instead of tackling the next obstacle, the longer it's going to take you to get to where you want to go.
Yeah, that's great, man. That's great. So for somebody that is being held back by criticism right now, I mean, they just need to let it go. They need to, what else do they need to do to shift out of that space where so many people get these handcuffs on them?
Yeah. Well, realize that you are in control of your destiny, and everyone else's opinion is not really going to matter at the end of the day. You're going to have to do what you feel is right and what you feel is best for you. You need to spend your time on the things that are really going to move the needle forward. And dealing with negativity in any way, shape, or form is not going to do that. So whether it's that unsupportive significant other, or whether it's friends and family who don't really get it, or they don't really understand what you're trying to do, or whether it's when you do achieve success, all the haters that have come out of the woodwork and tell you that, or, you know, and just try and make you look bad. I have people that have, you know, they just talk smack behind the scenes. I never even met them, and then they claim that they know everything about me, and it's all negative. And so it's just funny. You're gonna just realize that that's part of the game. And also, and one of the things that I do is that, like, hey, if people are talking about me, I recently had a guy who's very well known say some negative things about me to another colleague, friend of mine. And then within a week later, that same guy who was talking smack was reaching out to me, wanting to do business together. So guess what? That tells me right there that was just some hater BS that he was spitting out, when really he wanted to be involved with me. Obviously, you're not coming to somebody. If he really felt that way about me, he certainly wouldn't be coming to me to try and network and do business together, right?
Yeah. So one of the things that you've mentioned is like, hey, you know, if you know what's right for yourself, man, so many people struggle with that. But you've known for a long time, you've always had a great vision and really had your great values. What would you say to somebody who goes, man, Joel, how do I know what matters to me? How do I know who to listen to? How do I know, you know, where to drive my direction in life? How do I know what to go after?
Yeah, well, you know, everybody knows. It's whether you let somebody else dictate. You know, everyone has something deep down that they want to accomplish, that they're passionate about, that they have dreams about, right? That you know, these are my dreams. These are what ultimately what I would. And you have people do this exercise in your workshop where you have them create what was the perfect day look like. What does your perfect life look like? What is your perfect ideal set of circumstances? When are you waking up? How much time are you spending with your family? What is your kind of freedom do you have around your work schedule? What kind of flexibility is there? All these types of things. For me, when it came to being successful, it was never really about the money. It was more about there were certain experiences that I wanted to have. There are certain because every time I did something great with people, it was always around some sort of event or experience. And we, you know, I was always, it's probably how I got myself in $20,000 credit card debt, because I was always the one paying for everybody, just so that we could all go out and have a great time, you know. And I would buy concert tickets or something, and we, six or seven of us, would go to a great concert, and that was epic. And I'm like, man, I just wish I had more financial resources to be able to do this type of stuff more often, because when everybody gets together like this, it's epic. These are the best times. These are where all the memories come from. These are where we look back on. We talk about this stuff. And I want to have the opportunity to do more and more of that. So for me, I knew, like, how is it going to do that? One, I need to find a way to where I could make a really good income for myself to allow myself to have it. And I knew that I was never going to do that by going down some field that I hated. I wasn't going to go to med school and be a doctor. I had no interest in being that, you know, either doctors, lawyers, whatever, the people who you think are at the top of the income bracket, except for entrepreneurs. But I knew that, like, hey, I could own my own business. I wanted to be an author at first, which I thought was going to be the road to me being wealthy and becoming a New York Times bestselling author. And then when that didn't happen, I had to pivot and figure out another way. Well, how can I still get my message out there and make some money? And then I learned more about ebooks and stuff like that. So anybody who's like, I don't really know if this is right or not, you know. You know, you may be questioning yourself. You may have a self-doubt that creeps in. You may have these other voices, either external or the voice inside your head, that tries to tell you something different. But if deep down it's pointing towards something, you know, do you need to go after it? And you know, are you gonna second guess yourself along the way? Sure, I did many times. You know, is this for me? Is this working? I'm 6-8 months in and things aren't really materializing. But if it's what you want to do, if it's, you know, we talk about the five pillars of impact. So number one is passion. You have to be doing something you're passionate about. And if you are passionate about it and that is your dream and you have these aspirations, then you're on the right path. It's just sometimes you don't have to stay on the path for, you know, a considerable amount of time before it starts to work out for you. And almost always that's the case. Don't get discouraged by things not working out, because very rarely you do that. James Clear talks about the stone cutter who's slamming down the hammer on the stone. 88, 89, 90, 98, 99, 100 blows. And the stone still looks like it did the very first time you hit it. And then boom, 101 comes and the stone cracks in two. Well, was it he did something magical the 101st time that made that stone break? No, it was the cumulative force of the 100 blows before it plus the extra one that made it happen. So everything that you're doing right now, you could be spending months of time that where you're grinding it out, where you're doing everything you can and it doesn't seem like you're really getting to where you want to, keep going, because that 101st blow is going to come and then you're going to hit that breakthrough. And then, you know, that's where, how you have the overnight success, right? It's like, no, it's you're a nobody and now you're a big somebody. Well, Yeah, it's a long time of being a nobody, and then it all just falls into place, and then you're a big somebody. That happened for me where, you know, I was 19 years old wanting to get in the fitness industry. I didn't really make any money in the fitness industry until I was 27 years old. So that's 8 years later. I started writing for magazines when I was 20 years old. 27 is when I got into ebooks finally. Yeah. And it took a lot of failures and screw ups along the way and things not working out for me to even get into that industry. Yeah. And then a lot of more networking and a lot of studying and a lot of learning marketing and all that. And then it all started to work out. But I was working on it the whole time. I wanted to be in this industry. I wanted to be making money in this industry. I was working on it for 7 years.
And you left being a teacher, took a year off for the book, and then had to go back to be a teacher.
Yeah, that was the worst experience of my life. I can't think of a time where I had been more disappointed. I thought that this was it. I got this book deal. I had $100,000 advance. I paid off my credit cards, and then I had to pay taxes, of course, as well. And then next thing you know, I didn't have a whole lot of money left over. I like celebrated by buying some really good football tickets or whatever. And next thing you know, after a year of living off that money, and because I took the year off from teaching to be available for media and stuff, and I had some opportunities that presented themselves the first month or two after the book launched. And the book launched right as school year was starting. Mm-hmm. So I very quickly found myself not busy at all and living off of my advance money. And I got to a point where I realized that, like, I'm not going to get another book deal in the traditional way. Yeah. And I'm going to have to figure this out. And I was in a position where I had to go back to teaching. I had to figure it out or go back to teaching. Well, I ended up doing both because it wasn't an option. I had to go back. Otherwise, I'd be in a really bad financial situation. So I went back. And as I went back, at that same time is when I started learning marketing. I invested in Yannick Silver's copywriting workshop, wrote my first sales letter for an online coaching program. I knew some people were doing online coaching. Yeah. And I had a really small list of maybe like 700 or 800 people or something that had followed me from my articles that I had written and came over and found my website and signed up for a free newsletter. And so they were hyper engaged people because I didn't even understand the concept of like a free report or a lead magnet or anything to entice people to sign up. But these are people who just like wanted to hear more from me. But anyway, I had this list of 600 people, wrote this sales letter, launched my coaching program, and I was going back to school at the same time. But when I launched that, I think we got like 40 some people into the program at $200 a month. So it was like $8,000 a month I was making. And that's when I started to really believe that I could do this, you know? And then I was like, all right, well, I got the coaching program thing. Now I just got to get more people on my email list. Well, how do I do that? I'm going to create an ebook. Other people can promote it. I'll get customers. I can do one of these product launches that, you know, Jeff Walker and Frank Kern were kind of mastered and were talking about. And then, you know, next thing you know, I'm just piecing together what's the next step. And that was the year where everything turned around. I went back to school for 1 year. Unfortunately, I worked around the clock. I was two full-time jobs. I was working at the school full-time to pay my bills, and then I was working on the business full-time after, sleeping maybe 3-4 hours a night. Maybe I'd sleep in a little bit later than on the weekends, but I still worked every weekend as well in the business. So I was burning the candle at both ends. I did everything that I had to do. But by the end of that year, that type of dedication that I put into it and all that work that was put in before that and all the failures and all the things that didn't work out and then finally finding my right stride with this online marketing stuff, I went back to school. We launched our products with Cheat Your Way Thin. I was making like $8,000 to $10,000 a month just from the coaching program. Then we launched that product, and in 3 days, I made like $120,000 or something like that. And then I
tell the story about how you called ClickBank to see if it was really your money.
Yeah, so I didn't know anything about ClickBank. ClickBank is the largest digital marketplace in the world, and it's where a lot of people sell their ebooks and their digital material. And they do physical products now, but at the time it was all digital, and so it was all the fitness ebook guys were selling through ClickBank, and that's where all the how people would promote products and earn affiliate commission and all that stuff. But I didn't know anything about the platform, and I was just, my coaching program was done through PayPal. So I didn't understand how ClickBank worked or what the numbers on the dashboard meant. And I didn't have any sales prior to me going live with the ebook launch. So we launched the ebook. I remember I went to bed at like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, just making sure everything was ready and set up, and all the ducks were in a row and people were mailing, and I was on the phone all night of launch night with affiliates, getting people excited about mailing and the affiliate contests we were running. And then I think I woke up at like 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning, after catching a few hours of sleep, and I was like very anxious about logging in to see how the promotion was doing. So, you know, it was nothing but zeros there all the weeks before while I was getting everything all set up. And then I logged in and there was like $24,000 in change on the dashboard. You know, you had those bars, right?
Yeah.
Those, I think they were red and blue at the time. It was a red bar that was going across, and it had at the end of it, it said $24,000. And I'm like, wow, this looks like it's doing pretty well. I would have been, if that was gross, I would have been like, that, this is awesome. But I wasn't sure. I'm like, do I still need to pay affiliates out of this? So I called ClickBank customer service. I said, hi, this is my first day selling on the platform. And this is my first product launch. I'm brand new here. And I don't really understand how this works. I'm logging in and I see $24,687 on the dashboard here. Do I still need to pay affiliates a 75% commission out of this, or is this like my portion? Like, oh no, that's yours. That's you know.
So it's really $100,000 that you made overnight.
Right. And gross. Yeah, over $100,000.
Because you paid $75,000 in commissions, and then you kept the 25.
Yeah, and we had a big day one. Had a moderate day two, as was with these 3-day promos, and then the deadline day three. We had another really big. We did $365,000. But yeah, I mean, like that first day, I think I did like $40,000+ for myself, which was insane. It was insane for me to see numbers like that. And then, I went back and when I went on sabbatical after I got my book deal, I did so with a bit of fear in the back of my mind. What if this doesn't work out? And is this the right move? When I came back this time and I put my letter of resignation in, I had no fear whatsoever, because I'm like, I've been making $8,000 to $10,000 a month with this. Then I just ran this launch that is like the biggest one of all time in the industry. Now I got this email list so I can market other stuff too. Like I knew like this was the path to the future, and I had nothing to worry about. This was going to be very, very reliable income for me. And then it just grew from there. You know, I went, my initial goal was to make $20,000 a month, which would put me at about $250,000 a year. And, you know, obviously I blew through that goal really quickly. I made $120,000 in 3 days. And then, you know, I settled into making 50, 60 grand a month. And then it was working my way up to $100,000 a month. And then, before long, I was making a few million dollars a year selling ebooks, working, you know, a couple hours a day. And there were some concentrated bursts in there when I was, running launches, you know, for, I'd say maybe 4 months out of the year, I worked really, really hard. And then the other 8 months of the year, I kind of just coasted and sent emails and hung out with people.
That's great.
And it was a great business to be in. Then I started BioTrust and everything went in the total opposite direction from our lifestyle.
Then I got 4 weeks off a week. So, man, people are listening to this. They're amazed. They listen to your other podcast, Born to Impact. They hear you talking to all these amazing people. And this is where the fourth deadly C comes in, after we've talked about circumstances, crowd, criticism. And this one is when you start comparing yourself to others and how this can get people off track. And you kind of talked a little bit about this, about knowing deep inside. But how can this derail people, and how have you – I mean, you hang around all these people and you've never kind of deviated from that.
Yeah, there's a couple of things, you know. It's who are you comparing yourself to? And I just released a podcast called Destroying Good Enough Syndrome. And for most people, you're comparing yourself to the other mediocre average achievers in the world. And I don't say that to, you know, be negative about people, but like there's a top 1% for a reason, right? And then there's the other 99%. Are you comparing yourself to the 99% and saying, oh, I fit in with this group? Well, that's not the group that I want to fit in with. So why in the world would I be comparing myself to them, what they've accomplished? Or this is what my family has accomplished. And these self-limiting beliefs, you know, or maybe these self-fulfilling prophecies about what is possible for you from your upbringing. Who cares? It doesn't – everyone – almost everyone who has achieved some level of greatness – has come from close to nothing, and they had to be the one that broke the mold, right? We have our friend Bezos, who came from being an immigrant, extremely poor, living in poverty as a child, and parents had nothing. He tells a story about he had killing lice when he was in grade school by his mom, just dumped gasoline on his head, you know, and washed his hair with gasoline. It's just like – and now, he's one of our best friends, multi-millionaire, extremely successful franchise owner. Not just an owner, but he created the franchise, Fit Body Bootcamp. And those are the people that you can be like. And when that's one of the things, reasons why I started the Born to Impact podcast is to tell more of these stories, right? Because it doesn't matter where you are. Probably a lot of the people that I'm interviewing came from a crappier place than you're at right now. So what's your excuse, right? And, you know, it's you can compare yourself to the 1% and strive to be that, or you can compare yourself to the 99%. And then, you know, other people worry about competition and wanting to always worry about what everyone else is doing and trying to compete in an industry. And Grant Cardone, we had this discussion on the podcast about competing versus dominating. And you really want to be a competitor in the space where you're comparing yourself to what everyone else is doing? Or do you want to be the one who dominates the industry? Do you want to be the innovator that everyone else is copying in the industry? And you, again, who are you comparing yourself to? Are you looking at everyone else as just on the same playing field as you? Or are you just worried about being the best? Absolute best. I was just reading a book on the way here, and one of the chapters was about this very topic. It was about competition and compare. It's called The Way of the Warrior, and it's by Erwin McManus. And it's not even out yet. I'm actually interviewing Erwin in LA in 2 days from now.
He's a pastor?
Yeah. He's a pastor of Mosaic Church, a global speaker, speaks at all the huge mega conferences in the faith-based world. He was speaking in front of 30,000 people in Australia at Hillsong Conference last year. But one of the chapters talked about competition, and it was, you know, his son came up to him and said, Dad, is it wrong to be competitive? You know, I feel like we come from this faith-based background and we're not trying to be better than other people. Is it wrong to like want to be the best? He said, no, there's nothing wrong with being competitive whatsoever. I don't know where you got that vibe. I've never even said anything remotely close to that. And he said, oh, it's just kind of, you know, my feeling. I'm trying to navigate through this. Why I want to talk to you about it. And he said, you know, I just feel like I want to be the best, but I feel like there's something, you know, that I'm looking down at other people with if I'm trying to do that. And he said, well, why are you looking at other people? He said, because I want to be, I just want to be better. And he said, I thought you said you wanted to be the best. And he's like, well, I do. I want to be the best. He's like, then you shouldn't be looking at anybody but yourself because you're the one that you have to be every single day. Okay. And the guy who's at the top, right, who's he comparing himself to or competing with? There's no competition at the top. If you're at the very, very top, right? You're the Michael Jordan, right? You're the Tom Brady. There's nobody else there. Your only competitor is yourself. It's like, am I going to get too comfortable? And I think that's the next one we're going to talk about is complacency. But am I going to get too comfortable here and allow things to go backwards, or am I going to stay on my game? And Tim Grover obviously talks about this with the greats never being satisfied and always striving for more. And when your goal is to be the best, you realize that the only person standing in your way is yourself. And you don't need to worry about what everyone else is doing. I shared when I was on Grant's podcast about, you know, when we were building our company, BioTrust, we had other people coming up, you know, Organifi and these other supplement companies that were coming up and trying to steal market share from us, whatever. You know, that's how some people looked at it. But I never looked at it that way. I just said, okay. I was in an ebook space where the more people that came to play, the better everyone else did. Why can't it be the same in this industry? I'm not worried about other people who are coming in on, as far as like they're stealing market share from me. I'm trying to expand the market here. I'm trying to be the market trendsetter. I'm trying to be the innovator. I'm trying to take whatever this billion-dollar industry and turn it into a trillion-dollar industry. And if it is, I don't really care about the Organifi that's coming up the pipeline that's going to take $25 million market share from it. I want to make the market so much bigger that it doesn't matter who comes in. That as long as I can continue to grow by expanding the market and not worrying about, oh, that there's this fixed amount of money that people are going to spend on this industry, which is never true, right? It's infinite. And Grant Cardone talks a lot about that, about how success, you know, the potential for success is infinite. It's not a finite thing where, again, people, you have your slice of the pie, and once all the slices are taken, then nobody else can get in. You just create another pie, or you make the pie bigger.
Yeah, absolutely. So that does lead us to the next one. And so circling all the way back to, you know, we started at modest means with our circumstances. And I found that, you know, whether it's myself or whether it's some of my clients, some of our friends, we kind of go through these phases of complacency where it's like, oh man, I just caught myself shifting down a gear. So how do you fight complacency when you are the best, to stay the best, to be the best all the time? And for anybody out there who's listening, who came from very modest means and now they're the biggest earner that was ever in their family, or they're the first person to go to college, how do you make sure those people don't rest on their laurels and just, you know, and all of a sudden start coasting?
Yeah, well, being the biggest fish in the pond is a very dangerous position to be in, because there's nobody to push you to be better. You're kind of dominating in that area, right? So one, you have to, somebody like Michael Jordan, you just have to have that relentless edge where you're never satisfied. And you, again, this all goes back to the comparison thing we just talked about. You need to become your biggest competitor. And you need to say, I want to continue to get better. And the only way that I'm going to stay at the top is if I continue to set PR after PR after PR. So you have to adopt that mentality that just because you're at the top now doesn't mean you're going to be here tomorrow. The only way you're going to stay at the top is by continuing to outdo yourself. And you become your biggest competitor. The other side of complacency that's really dangerous is the people who, again, they're comparing themselves to the 99% that, well, I've done more than everyone else in my family. It's just good enough. Or, well, I've, you know, within my circle of friends, I'm at the top of the food chain here. I'm earning more than anybody else. But you're making $75,000 a year, right? Is that really going to allow you to afford the experiences that you want to experience in life? Is that really going to set you up to where, like, this idea of retirement is a non-issue? Right, like I could retire at any given point in time and have enough money to sustain myself for the rest of my life and live a very nice life. But if I was making $75,000 a year, just saving, hopefully one day where I could finally stop working. Like I don't work because I have to for a monetary reason right now. I work because I'm helping people. I'm passionate about what I'm doing. You know, and I want to. It's not because I have to. That's the difference, right? It's what kind of financial situation do you want to be in? Do you want to be in a financial situation where you have to work in order to pay the bills, or at least have enough money to set yourself up for retirement? Or do you want to be in a financial position where it's just a bonus? The money that I'm making from all this is just a bonus because I actually love what I'm doing. And I'm helping a lot of people. I'm making a huge impact. So who are you comparing yourself to? When you're at the top, get around people who are going to help you level up, you know. And I've surrounded myself with some big movers and shakers and big thinkers. That's why I'm hanging out with you. That's why you and Bedros are here, and we're all speaking at this event. And then we're going to LA and we're speaking at another event together. It's these types of friendships and these types of relationships that, again, iron sharpens iron. When you're around other people who are trying to outdo themselves all the time, I don't want to be around somebody who's trying to be better every single day, and I don't feel like I'm being better. One, if that is happening, and sometimes it does, it's going to get me in check, because I'm like, all right, there's definitely a lot of growth happening here, and I've been kind of in the same place for a while. I need to level up, and I need to start growing again. And unless you're surrounding yourself with those types of people, you never have that push to do that. You have to see, you know, sometimes I have to see other people who are crushing it in order for me to say, I still got work to do.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not a negative thing. Like I have to, you know, achieve the same level of success they are. It's just like they're growing and I'm not. And I'm not cool with that. And I want to be around them more because they're making me see this in myself. Right. And then, of course, there's the other side where people are just, you're comparing yourself to the wrong people. You get complacent because you see the fact that most people, you're doing better than most. Well, who cares? You're in the top 50%. Big deal, right? The top 50% isn't getting you anywhere in life. If I was in the top 50%, I want to be at the top of the top of the top. If I'm just above average, or maybe even so, that's what most people are looking at. Like, I'm better than average. Well, better than average isn't, you know, okay, you're going to live a slightly better than average life. Yeah, is that what you want? No, I want to excel in everything that I do. I want to be in a position where I don't have to worry about any of this stuff financially. I want to be in a position where I can have amazing experiences with my friends and my family. I want to be in a position where I can have massive impact, where I can give back, where I can be super charitable, where I can help as many people as possible, where I can get these products that I'm creating that I believe in to as many customers as possible. And when you're thinking like that, as opposed to like, oh, better than average, you know, a friend of mine who was listening to the podcast posted to a story today. He's like, he's listening to the podcast and he said, you know, break up with average. Average is you know, the biggest enemy out there. And if your goal is just to be better than average, you're not shooting nearly big enough to make a big impact in your own life and in the lives of others.
Absolutely. And you know, you've used that word impact a couple of times. And one thing that you said in my Perfect Life retreat, which I thought was one of the best messages, was income comes before impact. And everybody writes all these things. They want to have an impact. They want to help people. They want to transform lives. And we see this, but they're playing small in the rest of their business, but they all claim to want to have a big impact. So, you know, give us it's one of the final topics here. Give us some words of encouragement to go out to make sure that if we want to have that impact, we have to have the income first.
Yeah. Well, it's, These concepts are, you know, if we say what's more important, the impact or the income, and the answer is they're both equally important. For if there's one that's more important, it probably would be the income, because you can't really have an impact. I look at it this way: income, I translate that to marketing, and impact, I translate that to product. Okay, you have a great product. That's what's ultimately going to make the impact on the end user, right? It's a product or service that you're offering. If you have a great service, if you have an amazing product that truly will help anyone who buys it and does it, but if your marketing sucks and no one buys it, it doesn't matter. You just have like this amazing thing that's a waste, right? You have the ability to impact, but you can't because you're not able to generate any income with it. And that happens through the marketing. The reverse is also true. You could have amazing marketing, the best marketing out there, or maybe really aggressive marketing, whatever, and you can sell a lot of products. But A, it's a crap product, so it's not really ever going to help anybody because it's not going to work. And then B, it's not a sustainable business model. Because people aren't going to come back. They're not going to trust you. They're not going to want more from you. They're just going to say, you got my $35 this one time. A number of people are going to refund. A number of people aren't going to care enough to call in and refund or to deal with that. But they're never going to buy from you again. When does it all come together for massive impact? one, you have great marketing, so you can generate that first sale, and then you have an amazing product that's going to generate the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, tenth, hundredth sale to the same customer. Because you have great marketing, which is the income portion of that, and then you have a great product that's going to have people coming back for more. But having that thing that's going to impact people in and of itself is never enough. You have to be able to generate sales around whatever it is that you're offering in order to make an impact. You need to be able to bring in customers. You have an amazing product with no customers, it's not making any kind of impact. You have to have the income and the marketing to sustain and to push it into something that's worthwhile.
And then how many, because of all the income you guys did at BioTrust, how many make-a-wishes did you grant to people? This is like a real impact.
Yeah. It's over 100 now. I think it's like maybe 160 something. It's over $1 million that we raised for Make-A-Wish between us matching customer donations as well. And then we also have fed a hungry child with every order, and that's over 3 million orders now, and wow, over 3 million children that were fed through No Kid Hungry. So, I mean, that's the type of impact it happens at scale, right? And guess what? 3 million orders had to come in first for those kids to be fed. That's the impact right there. And of course, in those 3 million orders, we're impacting a lot of people who are getting healthy and using our products and becoming healthier and becoming more fit. But then there's those ancillary levels of impact with giving back that can't happen. I can't give anything back if I'm not getting anything in the first place. Yeah. If I'm not generating anything coming in, how can I then have it going out? It can't happen that way. There has to be resources coming in order for me to go have them going out as well, so I can make a positive impact.
That's absolutely amazing. So we have talked about the five C's that can really be the deadly five C's, or you can turn the adversity into advantage with what we listed as your circumstances, the crowd that you hung out with, the criticism that you get, the comparison you might have against others, and then the complacency you might fall into. And Joel, I think you really, if we could sum it all up, is really about that growth mindset and knowing what matters to you, right? And being and having that as your internal drive.
You know what it is. You know what it is that you want out of life. It's are you going to go get it? And here's all the things and reasons why you may not. You might get comfortable. You might get really complacent. And you might be comparing yourself to the wrong people. You may say, oh, this is good enough. I'm doing better than average. You may fall into criticism or the naysayers, and they're going to stop you from chasing your dreams. You may get with the wrong crowd. No one's there to push you. You a bunch of negative people who are just achieving average, living mediocre lives, and that's who you're hanging out with. Guess what? You're going to fall into the average of those five people that you're surrounding yourself with. And then maybe you use your circumstances as an excuse. Oh, this, woe is me. This happened to me. These were the cards. I was dealt a bad hand. Blah, blah, blah. Wah, wah, wah. Right? Any of these five things can turn around to be the reason why you're not successful. Or you can say, nope, I'm not going to fall victim to any of these five things. Because you look at somebody like Nick San Anastasio, worst circumstance, ultra successful. It's not an excuse. It's not going to fly. He's leveled up because he's got himself around the right crowd. Guys like me and you, Craig, are sharpening one another. Did I deal with my fair share of criticism? Yes, I did, and I still do. Is it going to stop me from being successful? No, because I'm not paying attention to the wrong type of criticism. I'm not comparing myself to the wrong people. I'm looking at what's the top 1% and how do I get to the top 1% of the 1%, right? And then I have to be really careful about being complacent, and I have to constantly surround myself with other people who are growing. And as I see other people growing, I don't want to be the one in the group that's not growing. I want to outshine that. So these five things could take you in the wrong direction, but when you know them and you understand them, make sure that you can make sure that you're not going to fall victim to them. And not one of these five things is a good, genuine excuse for not being successful, because there's people that have to deal with all five of them and they've overcome.
Absolutely amazing. So, Joel, what is next for you?
Well, we are on episode 16 of Born to Impact that was just released. We're excited about building that up to over 100 episodes.
Are you guys number one in business? Is that the category where people find you?
Right now, we actually jumped categories just to draw in some different audiences. We were in health for a while. We got up to number one in health.
Okay.
We're up to number two in business at one point in time. We're number one in the health category for a number of weeks. And now we've jumped over to the religion and spirituality category, and because we do come from a faith background, although we talk about business, we talk about life, we talk about, you could consider us self-help, you can consider us, we could fall into any one of these categories, but one of my strategies here is that as we get into different categories and we rank high, we can attract other types of guests and different types of audiences. So we have we're building a very diverse audience by attracting people organically in different categories. So we'll spend another 3 or 4 weeks in this category, and then we'll probably hop back to business. Hmm. I think we'll ultimately settle long-term in the business category. But my big vision for Born to Impact is for it to be more than just a podcast. We're getting a lot of these faith-based leaders on, Erwin, as an example. Obviously, you were on, Pedro was on, Tim Grover was on, we had Grant Cardone on. We're going to be recording with Ed Milette and
Lewis
Howes, yes, this week, Steve Weatherford, Jim Quick, a number of others this week coming up. And we're getting a lot of great entrepreneur leaders and a lot of great faith-based leaders that are coming. We have Levi Lusko on, who's spoken in front of crowds of 25,000 plus. I think Harvest Crusade with Greg Laurie. I just got connected with him. He is having a conference at Dallas Cowboys Stadium.
Wow.
It was something like 80,000, some maybe 100,000 people, because they're going to open up the field for seating. I mean, there's a lot of movers and shakers in different areas. And my whole vision with Born to Impact was to connect the two worlds, the entrepreneurial leaders and the faith-based leaders, and to get them talking. Not that they have to agree on every topic, not that they have to agree on every subject, but there's a lot that each side can learn from the other side. And ultimately, we want this to become a movement that lasts, that goes beyond the podcast. We want to have a live event. I want to be, by 2025, my vision is to be in Tampa Bay Lightning Stadium, downtown Tampa. It holds over 18,000 people, probably a little bit more than that, with floor seating, for concerts and stuff. I would want to have the Born to Impact Summit or Born to Impact Conference, whatever we wind up calling it, in that venue by 2025. Now, we won't start there. We'll start, at a decent-sized venue, mm-hmm. Locally in Tampa Bay area, go from 2,500 to 7,500 up to 18,000-20,000 people at a venue. There's the amphitheater there. That's an outdoor venue that can accommodate probably up to 25,000 people. So there's a lot of venues.
And there's Bucks Stadium, Raymond James Stadium.
Exactly. And, we're not going to stop. But 2025, I'm setting my vision for 2025 to have that event at the hockey stadium, at the hockey arena, which holds close to 20,000 people. And then we'll, I think we can do it. We will do it. And again, this is not something that we're monetizing in any way, because that's not what this is about, right? I have other businesses that I make a great deal of income from, but this is about giving back and impacting people and inspiring people. And that's a message that I don't want financial resources in the beginning to be something that stifles somebody from finding out about us. That's why the podcast is free. That's why we don't bore people with advertising or anything like that, that I feel like may be a deterrent for some people. Reason why somebody may not listen, because they think that we're trying to make money from it. No, it's all free content. And when we do a live event, I'm going to turn to my really well-to-do entrepreneur friends to be sponsors of the event. And I'll charge $5 or $10 to get in for a 3-day event where we're going to have caliber of speakers that people are normally spending several hundred dollars to $1,000+. To go to a conference like this, it's going to be, just pay $10 to get in the door and show that like you're actually putting a little something up. And then the rest, if I have to come out of pocket from it or go to friends for sponsorships, that's what it's all about. So it's all about the impact on the grandest scale possible. And that's what my big focus is. That's what my passion is. Obviously, I'm going to still continue to run these companies, but I'm excited about the impact that's going to be, because 10 years from now, I'm not going to be doing BioTrust. I'm not going to be doing some of this other stuff. I think this is what I'm going to be doing. And then I'm going to watch other people creating the next BioTrust and the next company like that in their own respective fields. And it's going to be people who came up through Born Impact and finally said, you know what, I've been coasting for too long. I've been living a life much less than the life that I was born to live. I found this podcast, I lit a fire under me, and then look at, here's what I've achieved. And because we made it very low barrier to entry, the podcast is free. The events aren't going to cost very much money to get into. We're going to inspire the biggest audience possible. And we know that only a small percentage of people will actually do something with the information. But hey, if we can cast a 20,000 person net and it's only 2 or 3% that do something with it, it's a lot better than having 500 people in a room and then hoping that one person does something.
Absolutely amazing, Joel. Thank you so much. Everybody listening, check out Born to Impact podcast. If you can find it in whatever category Joel is hiding his podcast in. But, if you can find it, listen to it. It's absolutely amazing. You and Dan are a great combination. So, Joel, thank you so much for being on the show, my man.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. And look forward to the next time.
Next 10 years, my man. Next absolutely. 10 years.
Absolutely incredible. Joel was able to overcome those five deadly C's in life. Remember, they go like this. First of all, the circumstances you were born into, the crowd that you may have been hanging around, the criticism that you get from people, the comparison you have to others, and then complacency that can sit in and kill everything if you kind of overcome your modest means, all right? So listen, Joel's going to help you through those. And if he can get through them, you can too. Now, it makes you think, after listening to Joel, what's my excuse again? That's right. We don't have any. He talked about so many other people that were in worse circumstances than us, and we need to go out there and dominate in every area of our lives, all right? So let me know if you agree. Let me know if this was helpful, and send me an Instagram direct message at RealCraigValentine or email me at support@earlytorise.com. We would love to know what you think about today's show, and we would love a 5-star rating over on iTunes and for you to give us a review. Now, one last thing that I want you to do is something that Joel did. He's done twice now, is to come to one of my Perfect Life workshops where we will help you double your income and work 10 hours less per week. Joel has made dramatic changes in his life since doing that. He went from working all night to working normal hours, having more time with his kids, and actually making more money with less stress, all right? So go to perfectlifeworkshop.com to apply to work with me at my next coaching event near you. I can't wait to meet you and help you build the perfect business and dominate just like Joel is doing in every area of life. Just like Joel, you are unstoppable, and I'll see you soon.